civilization.
I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion.
I want every man, woman, and child to understand how close we are to chaos.
Can't get no sleep.
All right, welcome to our second episode of Alternatives to Thought. I'm Chael Marin. I'm here with Nick Arcus.
Hey.
And Norman Schultz.
Well, hello.
Today, our topic of discussion is AIDS denialism. This is a broad category of conspiracy theories, which essentially state that AIDS doesn't exist or that HIV does not cause AIDS, and a whole slew of other things we're going to talk about today.
It's so bizarre, I never even heard of it.
Yeah.
It's just...
It's actually, it's not extremely prevalent, but as ideas go, it is particularly dangerous, depending on the kind of person who has it.
It's apparently so dangerous, the cops are coming.
They're coming to take us away. We shouldn't be talking about this right now. This is too dangerous. So.
The theme of the intro, suppression,
yes.
Where they're coming to take us away.
Yeah.
Ironically, South Africa, it's not diplomatic immunity. So.
No, Nick, I had the exact same thought. When you, Chalmer, first told me about working on this, my first reaction was, well, what are you talking about? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, people actually still think that AIDS isn't real. What?
Yeah. And
I never knew anyone never did. I mean, like, I could see the very, very beginning.
Very beginning,
like,
I remember.
Very beginning.
Yeah.
And most of the arguments for this conspiracy stem from circumstances originating from the discovery and first classification of the disease, when the evidence was a little more ambiguous. People weren't quite sure what they were studying. Hmm. But since then, the evidence is undeniably vast.
Well, yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And so huge, in fact, that I want to first discuss about some of the things people believe and characterize kind of what this is as a category of conspiracy. But to discredit it would simply be a series of citations to scientific literature that would take several hours.
And we don't need to do. I don't think we need to convince our audience that AIDS is real.
And I don't think
that it's caused by HIV or those kinds of basic ideas.
And a lot of the arguments are either not arguments at all. You know, they're typical conspiracy kinds of arguments, or they're very specific arguments about studies that either have been discredited or were simply misunderstood.
Yeah.
And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these arguments.
It's so weird. I just, when I was studying this, you'll probably talk, I just don't, I can't see, like, I can't fathom the reason anyone would really have for denying it. I just don't.
We'll
don't
talk
really
about some
it.
Of those motives. Some of them are historical. Some of them are cultural. Some of them are racial. After we characterize kind of what this is, I want to talk about the consequences of this idea and why it's actually harmful. I think that as far as conspiracy theories go, it may be one of the most harmful conspiracy theories in existence.
Yeah. Sounds plausible.
And I'll jump the gun here, and I won't substantiate this yet. But it has simply, through people believing this, killed at least 30,000 people.
Right.
More than any natural disaster in the last 80 years, I believe. More than the tsunami.
What, 300,000 people killed, or?
30,000.
How many people died in the tsunami?
I think the more people died in the tsunami.
I have numbers. We were going to talk about it later.
Oh.
Yeah. 330,000. Not 30,000. It's 330,000.
That's what I thought. Okay.
That sounds, yeah.
So this is death specifically from AIDS denialism, that's not so from weird. AIDS itself.
300,000 plus people.
Yeah. In 5 years.
That's unbelievable.
And these years, by the way, for you people listening, this isn't like ancient history.
This is recent.
This is like in the new millennium.
This is in the last decade.
That is what's scariest about this, to me, honestly. When I was reading it, I couldn't believe how recent this was.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's something that should have been taking place like in the early like 18th century or something. I mean,
well, they didn't know about AIDS then. I could understand people denying this in the 80s, maybe.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
The tsunami killed between 230 and 310,000 people.
Huh.
The upper maximum of that estimate is less than the number of people killed by AIDS denialism in 5 years in one country.
Yeah. So let's be clear about what we're talking about, you know, assuming you make your case.
Yeah.
Which I think you will. But we're talking about people dying as a result of a mistrust and ultimately probably a misunderstanding of science.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot – I have talked about this before, and we'll talk about it again as far as the public's misunderstanding of science. But most of the time when we talk about it in this country, we talk about people not understanding science because they have the luxury not to. You know, a person who is healthy, has kids, they seem to have the luxury of questioning whether or not their kids need a vaccination, for example. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the anti-vax movement. We'll talk about that more in another episode. But it doesn't have a super high cost like this, mm-hmm. because people are living in a convenient situation where they can get away with questioning these things. But people in Africa, they don't have that luxury on an issue like this. True. And clearly look at the result.
And what's interesting about that is the victims in particular are not necessarily the denialists.
So the public.
Yeah. Right. The denialists are the people with the power to implement programs to fight these, to fund science, political machines. And so, you're absolutely right. There's a certain degree of luxury involved.
Yeah.
A large degree of luxury involved.
And until you brought this up, I never actually heard of it. So, I don't consider myself wholly ignorant on everything around the world like this, but I had no idea that this was like even really a problem.
Yeah. We've gotten you a little bit off track where you wanted to go.
Let's start here.
Your beginning case?
Let's first characterize the various claims made by AIDS denialists.
Okay.
The most general one and the most common one is simply that HIV does not cause AIDS, the HIV virus either does not exist or that it does not cause that condition.
Hang on a second. I just want to make sure that we didn't go too fast here. Part of this is the belief that the HIV virus doesn't even exist.
Yes.
God, it's so weird.
Some people think
it just seems like it's impossible to deny that. I just...
Very few AIDS denialists, and the name's kind of deceptive, most AIDS denialists don't deny that AIDS does not exist.
Right.
Even though the evidence for AIDS being a condition is just as straightforward as the evidence for HIV being a virus
that
causes it. So the first argument is simply that HIV does not cause AIDS. And this is a pretty easy argument to debunk. Really, tons and tons of scientific studies specifically focused on this or that indirectly establish that HIV does cause AIDS.
Right.
And I'll give you a quick list here of the literature or the conclusions that the literature reaches. It would be useless to me to sit here and list literally the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of publications that actually establish this science.
Right.
Go on to Google Scholar. You'll keep yourself busy for a year.
Right. I don't think our listeners are going to...
Yeah, it won't be useful. But for one, HIV and AIDS infection are linked in time. When we see HIV as a virus in a population, we see AIDS.
Right.
When there's no HIV in a population, we don't see AIDS.
Right.
Plain and simple. One of the single most factors that predict the development of AIDS is HIV. If you find someone with an HIV virus and you predict that they will get AIDS, you're almost certainly wrong. If you find someone without or with HIV and you predict they will get AIDS, you're almost certainly right,
mm-hmm.
if they're not undergoing treatment. This is very straightforward. People with HIV get AIDS,
mm-hmm.
Invariably, almost. And when I say almost, I mean 99.99%.
Yeah, I just always thought it was a given. You know, trying to think back, when I was reading this stuff, I think the earliest I had ever heard this taught to me was sometime around when I was like in first grade. Even I remember way back then hearing about it,
right?
About what AIDS were,
right?
Yeah.
Well, I got a question.
Sure.
In order to establish, scientifically a causal connection, it can't just be time or correlation. You need to establish a mechanism. That's a fair general statement, do you think, Chalmer?
Absolutely. So
what's the mechanism? Just briefly describe the mechanism by which HIV leads to AIDS.
So you're talking about
the effect on the immune system.
Yeah. So you have these immune system cells called CD4 cells, mm-hmm. and they're part of your immune system. HIV specifically infects those cells. and utilizes them as a host in order to produce more HIV cells.
Awesome.
And in infecting those cells, it inevitably kills them. They're host cells. It adopts their molecular machinery to make more.
They're not good guests.
Yeah.
That's a hostile takeover.
Right? Yeah.
They come in, they eat all your food, they never clean up after themselves.
Ultimately, they burn down your house.
Yeah. They're just, they're the worst house guests.
Trying to lighten up a heavy subject here.
But the same thing, if you get a disease that infects and destroys your liver, you're going to die of liver disease
because
your liver doesn't work. Well, if your immune system doesn't work, you're going to get diseases.
Well, yeah.
In fact, that's the next point I was going to make.
Sounds like some sort of deficiency of the immune system.
Yeah, an autoimmune deficiency of some kind.
I don't know what
should be
called
in the name.
Right.
Oh, God. You guys are dorks.
In fact, there are certain kinds of opportunistic diseases that are extremely prevalent in people with HIV and AIDS.
Yeah, the person with AIDS can easily get an infection, or they can get a cut that won't heal properly. What are some other?
TB.
Is one of
them. And leprosy, which is a related organism.
Leprosy, isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And we see this in particular populations now.
And these are basically viral conditions that most of us carry around a little bit of.
Bacterial,
excuse me. Okay.
Yeah.
And our immune system just keeps them at bay. Mm-hmm.
Certain kinds of sarcomas, cancerous growths that are inhibited by your immune system. Pneumonia, which is something that's common in hospitals anyway when people are immunosuppressed.
Right.
One of the Achilles heel of immunosuppressed people is pneumonia. It's one of the things that kill a lot of people in a hospital.
Yeah.
And in populations where we do not have HIV prevalent as a virus, let alone AIDS, which follows, these diseases are not nearly as prevalent.
Right.
They're also strongly correlated with people with autoimmune deficiency.
Right.
So that's another thing.
All the links in the chain are there.
Yeah, you ask yourself, if you're from America and you're in a developed nation, how many people have you met with a mycobacterium-related disease? That's TB. That's leprosy. Mycobacterium caused these. Have either of you guys ever met somebody that said, I've been having this issue with my TB?
I've known a few people that had pneumonia.
Yeah,
but, you know,
much more
they usually treat it. Yeah,
actually, one of my good friends has had TB when she was younger. But
really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. If you go to a place where you have poor treatment and you have a high prevalence of HIV positive people, it's common.
Huh.
It happens to a lot of people.
Right.
Certain places in Russia have actually cultivated antibiotic resistant strains of mycobacterium because they were being treated by antibiotics to help fight off autoimmune.
Right.
Pathogens.
Right.
Opportunistic pathogens taking advantage of an autoimmune disorder.
Right.
Let's see. This idea that HIV does not cause AIDS is bunk. And I was going to bring up another thing as far as a mechanism of scientifically establishing whether or not it's actually caused by HIV, that AIDS is caused by HIV. Have you heard of Koch's postulates?
No.
Koch's postulates is this concept in epidemiology that we use to establish whether or not an infective agent causes a particular disease. There are three of Koch's postulates. A, that the cause is strongly associated with the disease, that you can isolate the causative agent from an individual exhibiting the symptoms of that disease.
Wait, is this B?
This is B.
Okay.
Yeah. And C, is the idea that you can take that causative agent from one host and put it into another host and cause the symptoms of that disease. Now, this brings up some ethical concerns.
So, hang on, I want to go slow.
Sure.
So the first A is, I'll just call the association clause, because it's saying that there's a causal association with something, a pathogen and a disease.
Yep.
And B is an isolation, as in you can isolate that.
Absolutely.
Correlate. And C, if you transfer it to a healthy host, it has the same effect.
It's pathogenic.
You can affect.
Gotcha. So these are ways of showing the causal connection. It's not just a correlation.
This is how you would test the hypothesis.
Gotcha.
And obviously you can do this in animal studies with similar diseases in cats and monkeys.
Right.
But as far as a human study, you can't really.
They can't transfer. We've got this pathogen that looks to be killing people. We want to transfer it to you to see if it still does that.
Pretty sure it's a death sentence, but you will pay you $20 for being part of the trial. Yeah,
how about 30?
Yeah.
We'll offer it to death row inmates instead of death row. You can do this if you want. You might live. If you live, you get to go free.
Some of my students have proposed doing medical experiments on death row inmates.
I'm like, how unusual.
Yeah.
How unusually cruel.
Yeah. So the question is, does HIV in humans meet these criteria? Well, the first criteria is pretty easy. Anyone who denies this criteria is simply either ignorant or is ignoring the huge, huge amount of evidence that establishes that correlation.
Isn't it funny how those have the same root word, ignorant and ignore? Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, you're right.
Something common with them. There might be a causal link.
Slightly different connotations, but I think I know what you mean.
Yep.
Isolation of the disease from the host. We know that from people who have AIDS, we can isolate HIV. We know that from people who do not, we can't isolate HIV. Well, we can
almost
isolate.
Like they don't have it, so we can't isolate it.
There are a few people that have HIV that don't get
it. You can have HIV and not have AIDS. You can be HIV positive. So I misspoke there. What I mean to say is that people that we can't isolate HIV from don't develop AIDS.
Right.
Yeah. But if you have HIV, it's very probable you will develop AIDS, or you almost certainly will develop AIDS without treatment.
Right.
So we can isolate antibodies to the virus in people with AIDS. We can isolate the virus in people who have AIDS. We can isolate genetic material from the virus from people who have AIDS. We have electron micrographs.
Yeah, the HIV virus has had its genome mapped, correct? Yes.
We have pictures of it.
Yeah.
And not just pictures of some random virus, pictures of somebody with AIDS.
Yeah.
There are multiple tests. We do Western blot, we do PCR, we do ELISA immunoadsorbent assay to detect HIV either directly or indirectly in people with AIDS.
This is like crazier to me than the people who don't believe in the moon landing, honestly. I mean, you don't even have to go to outer space to goddamn see this. I mean,
I think I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think believing that we didn't land on the moon is probably more plausible than believing in this.
Yeah, and the science behind these techniques we're using, like ELISA and Western blot, conceptually, if these are invalid, then half of what we know about biology and biochemistry
is just not true, right?
These are so ubiquitous as sources of evidence, and they're conceptually so established.
It's probably why this isn't reported on in the news, because they don't have "Are you shitting me?" section in the news post tonight. People actually believe this.
Well, actually, some of the news organizations do, but they probably didn't report on this, sadly, because it's doesn't affect the Americans much.
That's true.
Yeah, sadly. This is, unfortunately, it's going to affect. So I want to say just a little bit about transmission pathogenesis is the third of Koch's postulates. Obviously, we can't take the virus from one person, put it into another, and say, sorry, dude, turns out we were right. There have been several incidents of cross-contamination through blood transmission, even in dentistry offices, where people have died and gotten HIV and died as a result. So we've established... You weren't recording?
No, I'm recording.
Oh, okay. What does that look for?
My look is about dentist office.
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously?
Yep. Killed 30 people.
What?
Yeah.
What? This has got to be in the 80s when we didn't know shit about it.
Yeah, this was back when we didn't know shit about it.
Oh, you're fine. And so they didn't properly autoclave their, instruments or something like that?
I think it was directly from the dentist. There was a dentist who had
HIV. God. Boy, I hope we don't make some paranoid listeners from this episode.
We've never really had a controlled scientific study trying to falsify the hypothesis of transmission.
Right.
Tragic observation is established beyond any reasonable doubt.
Right.
And it's not something we can do a controlled scientific study of, so to ask is unfair.
Well, we could probably do this with rats or...
And we can. We can do it with monkeys, and we can do it with cats.
Oh, okay.
Because there are HIV. Our HIV won't infect a rat. But there are related pathogens. So originally...
Oh, so you need to use other animals, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
HIV originally comes from...
monkeys.
Simians.
Right.
Chimpanzees.
Right, right.
Not chimpanzees. I believe it was a... it doesn't matter. A tiny monkey.
Right.
Whatever.
A primate.
in the Congo.
I just did a monkey sound, just in case somebody heard that and said, "What the hell going? What the hell happened?"
Yeah, we our guest today is
Bobo. We actually had the monkey on our show who actually created it.
So. He's very sick, so he's not going to cue in very often.
I think at this point you've convinced us, and there's some neat Googleable stuff here, but you've convinced us that there's plenty of good evidence for the connection between HIV and AIDS, just to be thorough. I'd like to hear how this conspiracy begins and a little bit more about the situation in Africa.
Sure. So we've traced it back to Africa from a primate, as I said.
Right.
And since then, it has been impacted. Africa has been impacted the most by this virus, not just because of its epidemiological origin,
ground zero,
but for third world reasons:
poverty,
cleanliness, sexual activity, education, et cetera, et cetera. So it spread more quickly. But let's suppose that upon its discovery, and inevitably there's a lag between the onset of the illness as a global pandemic and its discovery and recognition, and there's not much you can really do about that. But let's suppose that several influential people in these third world nations simply rejected the concept that HIV caused AIDS long after it was established that it did. This is a very dangerous point, and the reason that HIV is as prevalent in Africa as it is in no small part due to this denial. And I'm going to use South Africa in particular as kind of a case study to show how harmful this denialism can actually be.
So what you're proposing, most people know about AIDS ravaging African countries.
Yes.
What you're proposing is that to some level of significance, a factor in that is not just because they're poor.
No.
Not just because they don't have access to good medical care, etc., but is in part because they have had this history of denying that AIDS is even real.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Now, during the discovery and first spread of AIDS in South Africa, the leader at the time was Nelson Mandela. Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
The person who took over after him was Thabo Mbeki, who was his vice president at some point.
Okay.
He was the AIDS denialist. And what I'm proposing is that here and in other places in the world, the reason AIDS is as prevalent as it is in Africa is due in no small part to this denial, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
So how prevalent is HIV in Africa? As of 2009, according to the United Nations AIDS Task Force, the number of adult and child deaths from AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa is 1.3 million. The estimated number of children under 15 that were newly infected in 2009 in sub-Saharan Africa is between 200 and 500,000. I mean, it's staggering.
Yeah, it is.
It's the same chart.
This is 2009.
2009.
Right, yeah.
The number of children under 15 living with HIV in 2009 is 1.4 to 3.1 million.
God.
And the estimated deaths of children under 15 from AIDS in 2009 is between 150 and 350,000 in sub-Saharan Africa alone.
Hmm.
And that really is astounding.
Yeah.
The number of newly infected adults and children in 2009 is 1.5 to 2 million in sub-Saharan Africa. As far as globally, let's see. The number of people living with HIV, adults and children, in sub-Saharan Africa is 25 million, upper estimate. Global deaths are about 2.1 million in 2009, for the year of 2009.
Hmm.
So we know that in sub-Saharan Africa, this is the most severe place on the planet. AIDS is not worse anywhere else. HIV is not worse anywhere else. More people have it. More people are dying from it. More people are getting it than anywhere else in the world. So why is this? It didn't even originate in South Africa, where it's the worst. It originated in the Congo from a chimpanzee.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because of, or in part, because of AIDS denialism. So now we're going back to the outline, Norm. So I want to introduce a few characters here. I talked about Thabo Mbeki. He was the president of South Africa, I believe, from the mid-90s to 2004. Okay. And he was an AIDS denialist, along with his health ministers. First, Manto Shababala Mizmeng, and who I will now, from now on, refer to simply as Manto.
Yes.
Rather than Shababalala.
Yes. And that sounds like you're mispronouncing it, but it looks to me like you are pronouncing it properly.
I am. That's what it looks like.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I'm not being ironic or at all.
That is what her name actually appears to be.
And also Nkazazani Zana Dlamini Zuma, who I will henceforth simply refer to as Zuma.
Gotcha.
And in 1994, they were part of the, they were the health ministers, the first health ministers who were part of basically an AIDS task force. At this point, HIV was established as the cause of AIDS. These two people were in charge of implementing plans to help control it and fight it. They're health ministers. What else would they be doing?
Right.
Unfortunately, Manto in particular was a very prolific AIDS denialist and heavily influenced Thabo Mbeki. So here's a few of the things that they did in power. They interfered with the timely introduction and distribution of antiretroviral therapy drugs in South Africa, partly because they believed that drugs like AZT, which was one of the first antiretroviral therapies, killed people.
They said they were toxic.
They were toxic, that they did more harm than good, or that they did no good at all. Or that the pharmaceutical companies of the white West were trying to wipe out black people completely. These are all beliefs in the scope of AIDS.
How did they get their jobs? It's just so dumbfounding to me.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, being trained to do science, having a degree in a scientific discipline does not make you good at, honestly, being a scientist, performing and understanding and interpreting scientific evidence, which I've noticed. They promoted alternative treatments for AIDS, including industrial solvents, garlic, olive oil, African potatoes, and lemons.
And Flintstone vitamins.
And I want to point out what I just said here.
Garlic for AIDS.
Industrial solvents. Talk about doing more harm than good.
Yeah.
Very, very sad. And there's still some people who support some of these chemicals and solvents today as treatments for HIV.
As in promoting drinking them or?
Injection.
Mostly. Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
What's really quite interesting is that there are actually peer-reviewed, well-controlled scientific studies on some of these, in particular African potatoes. They make your AIDS worse. ironically, coincidentally, I should say.
How would that be possible?
Nobody really supported a mechanism. Statistically, there was a significant reduction in immune activity on people consuming African potatoes. I don't know why. I don't know if anybody knows why. But it's just interesting because it wouldn't really matter what the publication said. She still would have recommended it.
Right.
That's kind of the point. The content of, and the reason I don't want to go through and discuss all the scientific literature here is because the content of the scientific literature is irrelevant. They don't care.
They don't care. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. They supported illegal medical trials using some of the aforementioned treatments, many of which whose inefficacy had already been demonstrated. Because at the time, by 1994 and onwards, there was already an alternative medicine establishment. They had already proposed some of these things. They got these ideas somewhere.
And by illegal, you don't mean, do you mean by international law or?
Yes, by international law. They violated international standards and ethics in the selection and information they gave to their patients. Basically, we talked about how it's unethical to take AIDS from one person and give it to another. Things like that. Basically, not giving someone a treatment that has been established as effective in a trial.
Right.
Isn't legal.
Right.
You can't forego treatment on a patient and take advantage of their ignorance.
Right.
So they killed people that way. Just a few at that point. Monto, in particular, did not cooperate with the use of antiretroviral therapies for the prevention of mother-to-child transmission, HIV, until forced to by a constitutional court. A cabinet revolt in 2003 was required before her cooperation with the use of highly active retroviral therapy to treat people with AIDS. So new drugs, not just AZT, which fairly is not a very good drug and is quite toxic, but better than nothing.
Right.
But new drugs came out, and those were categorically rejected by her and interfered with and rejected as import into the country. And what's interesting here is, at this point, people are still kind of getting their way. That's not really the point here. The point is not that therapies did not make it into South Africa. They eventually did. The issue is that when you're dealing with an infective disease, every second counts.
Right.
Right.
Some of these problems that they created in these implementation of these programs took implementation by as much as 3 years.
Yeah. You're already going to have problems of distribution and people knowing how to use the drugs and, you know,
and just instructions. The numbers you were given earlier about how many people die a year, you know, if you're delaying this by only a couple of years, that's a lot.
Right.
That's a big problem.
And you're, not only that, you have an ignorant populace, not just ignorant of disease spread, but also not really using very many contraceptives.
Right.
You have a population of people whose public authority on health issues is telling them to eat African potatoes and they'll be just fine.
Right.
And who is stating essentially that it's due to poverty and malnutrition is the cause of AIDS, in spite of no evidence to support that idea.
Right.
And garlic for some reason.
So I want to talk a little bit about one of these illegal medical trials, this industrial solvent. It's called Virodine, was one of the names under the medical trials. The chemical name is dimethylformamide.
What is this stuff?
So I'll tell you a little bit about it. This is a very basic chemical. Its numbers of applications are huge. One of the things, it can be used as an industrial solvent or just a solvent.
Like a solvent, okay.
Yeah, it's... it's an amine compound. We had these scientists, a husband and wife duo, Olga Patricia Visser, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, and her husband, is that Yaqui?
I don't know. Jacques.
Oh, okay.
Jacques.
I knew that. Siegfried from the University of Pretoria made Health Minister Zuma aware of their unauthorized medical trial involving Virodine and complained to Zuma about their research being blocked by the AIDS establishment, namely the international authorities trying to prevent them from killing people.
This is the part that bugs me about this.
Huh?
That there is a component of this that is reflected in American thinking, that science is somehow synonymous with drug companies and medical companies, and that represents collectively the establishment,
right?
And that's a reason to be skeptical itself.
Mm-hmm. They would say, like, why would they want to make you healthy? They want you to be sick, so they can keep giving you their drugs.
Oh yeah, you can feed into any of that. And this is my problem as a philosopher, which science is not that. By definition, if you're in a for-profit company, that entity is not a science organization.
Yeah.
Because science is not inherently in the business of making anyone money. That's a different objective than science. That is something that might use science. You might call people who work there scientists, but that is an enterprise, is not science.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no scientific establishment. It doesn't make sense.
No, science is made to be kind of, anybody can prove this. It's a war of ideas. It's not a democracy.
Certainly.
This is probably the same scientific conspiracy theory who, you know, believe in global warming, I'm sure.
Sure.
And this was the mindset of the health ministers there and the Thabo Mbeki taking over, I believe, in 1994 after Nelson Mandela.
Right.
They had this language of talking about science as an establishment, as the pharmaceutical companies, as the people who we trust to use science in our interests, but who invariably fail to do so on many occasions and sometimes don't fail to do so, but nonetheless are not the representatives of science itself.
Right.
We measure them against whether or not they've performed science or not. And consider their failure to be a failure. In response to this complaint by this husband-wife team of researchers at the University of Pretoria, Health Minister Zuma invited the Visors and some of their patients to various cabinet meetings to discuss their findings. Hmm. So they were not stopped by the South African government, despite being charged with conducting illegal medical trials. So now I want to talk about Thabo Mbeki. And a few of the things he said. Keep in mind, he was the president from... Oh, he was a deputy president from 1994 to 1999 and the president from 1999 to 2008, and he was an AIDS denialist. A few of the things that he said in various interviews. In 1998, Mbeki describes in a African National Conference magazine what a privilege it was to hear the moving testimonies of AIDS sufferers who had been treated with Viridine, with seemingly very encouraging results. Unfortunately, the results are not encouraging. Viridine doesn't do anything. It's bad for you. It has no effect on HIV or AIDS whatsoever.
So was he falling victim to anecdotal evidence, or is this just complete bullshit?
A great deal of it was anecdotal. Now, to his credit, as a person, I don't really dislike Thabo. I think he genuinely believed and was acting for the benefit of his populace.
Right.
He was an issue of paranoia. This is the post-apartheid South Africa. A lot of racial concepts went into it. This idea of the White West, where all these drugs and science are coming from, the scientific establishment, the drugs that are killing people in his own country, the association of sex and poverty, being associated with the black populace and the prevalence of HIV there. Right. So all of these things fueled that very defensive stance with HIV and AIDS.
He was well-meaning.
And to a degree, I can't blame him for his paranoia.
Right.
He ultimately reached the wrong conclusions and is ultimately responsible for, along with Monto and Zuma, many of these hundreds of thousands of deaths. But
it seems that he reached the wrong conclusions because he didn't understand how science works.
Precisely.
Didn't understand that, okay, if you're worried about a drug company not having your interest at heart, well, then look at the science behind it. Look at the peer-reviewed articles. Ask people who don't work for the company, researchers, get advisement from
not independent, your health minister.
Right? Yeah,
or get a team to do your own science to check it,
and also understand that anecdotal evidence it doesn't mean anything, especially in health.
And it's sad because in an ideal situation, he never should have had the power to make those kinds of decisions anyway.
Right.
Scientists and medical professionals should be making these decisions, but those same establishments, in some regard, failed him too. His health minister was an AIDS denialist.
Right.
She had various degrees of expertise in fields of epidemiology and biology.
He got bad advice.
So, of course, him as someone with no education in those areas is more inclined to trust that person.
Yeah, and
She certainly has the means of convincing him. I can talk to someone who has no understanding of biology, and I can make him believe all kinds of stupid shit.
Yeah.
Simply because I know the language.
Given the transitional period of that country at that time in history, I mean, it was really just a bad time for AIDS to start becoming prevalent. I mean, I guess it's like given what you just said, it seems like it was just a ripe field.
Recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
At this point, he heard this at this cabinet meeting where the Visors were at. He heard this testimony in 1998 as the deputy president, and he decided the cabinet decided to help this couple get approval for a scientific drug trial. South Africa's Medicines Control Council refused to grant the Visors permission. And so they were not given permission to conduct the trial.
Sort of infighting.
Yeah. But this is probably where he was first introduced to AIDS denialism and various works by other AIDS denialists from the West from the early 90s and late 80s. Specifically Matthias Rath, who we'll talk about later, and who, unlike Thabo, who I feel kind of bad for, is probably one of the most despicable people, examples of our species.
And Matthias Rath is a person who is from the West.
Yeah, and he's he's actually from Europe.
Oh, okay.
But we'll talk about him later. He's a prevalent AIDS denialist. We'll talk about him later.
Gotcha.
He's a real bastard. In 1999, Mbeki, now president, informs the National Council of Provinces that AZT drug is toxic and charges Health Minister Manto to find the truth. Hmm. I just did quotey fingers for those of you not here in the room. In 2000, speaking at an AIDS conference in Durban, expressed doubts about HIV being the primary contributor to AIDS and focuses instead on poverty as the cause of AIDS.
And the judge is really gone at that point.
And again, none of these ideas are unique to Mbeki. He didn't come up with them. These are all things that other people fed him and that he repeated and believed and acted on. In 2001, he formed the formation of the Presidential AIDS Advisory Panel directed by him, ended up being comprised of nearly all the best-known AIDS denialists in the world. Established experts on AIDS nationally and internationally were not consulted or asked or invited at all.
So weird. It's like the dream team of stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something that you said that Mbeki believed or promoted. He promoted the idea that AIDS was caused by poverty.
Yes.
I've heard this idea of poverty causing various things before. So, for example, on one of the documentaries that I watch regarding the war on drugs here in the United States, it talks about the myth of the cocaine baby.
Yeah.
As in the idea that, babies that are born extremely premature and in very, very poor health, in reality, it's not so much the cocaine that does that, it's poverty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of uncomfortable with that being a cause of a medical condition because, for obviously, that can't be the cause of anything medical. That's poverty means lack of money.
Right.
What you're talking about, beyond that, is not having enough money to afford good quality food and basic medical care.
Right.
So I understand the idea that poverty causes these things, but let's be clear, it doesn't cause anything like this.
Oh, certainly.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what he meant too.
He meant just lack of nutrition.
Yeah. Obvious. Yeah, he wasn't implying that simply not having money was causing it. He
technically, not having good nutrition does affect your immune system significantly.
Right.
It does.
So I wonder if there is some legitimate crossover symptoms that someone might have from just not getting enough nutrition. I doubt it.
Yeah. I would too. I think studies have been done on that. I don't recall the results.
Because having a lack of nutrition would affect the whole immune system, not just one particular part, which is what
you would expect AIDS does. You would expect poor nutrition to affect the natural progression of any disease.
Right.
Simply because you're less healthy in general.
Right.
So yeah, I know exactly what you mean, and that's kind of what he.
And it also depends on what the lack of nutrition is, right? So go back to the when we had vitamin C deficient sailors in Great Britain, right?
Yeah,
that had a particular effect on them. It wasn't a general system. It wasn't a general set of symptoms of having a bad immune system. It was a specific set of symptoms from a lack of a particular nutrient.
And in particular, what he's referring to with regards to poverty is malnutrition and then also recreational drug use, which is correlated in South Africa with poverty. You want to buy some cocaine, you go to the poor district. Well, maybe not cocaine, but you want to buy drugs, you go to the poor district.
Right.
And same thing in America. Drug use is more strongly correlated. Recreational drug use is more strongly correlated with poverty or poverty-stricken areas.
Well, I guess it depends on the drug again.
True. It depends on the drug.
Yeah.
you're not going to find a whole lot of cocaine in in the poor neighborhood.
Not the regular cocaine.
Not yet,
Other forms of cocaine,
And it depends, but there's this idea that HIV is associated with recreational drug use, which is actually not true. And this idea that HIV is correlated with homosexuality, which at the time in South Africa was associated with immoral living circumstances, poverty to some degree at a cultural level. So that's kind of what he was referring to. And he got a lot of those ideas, especially malnutrition, from Matthias Rath, who was a vitamin salesman.
Right.
I'm sure that had
interestingly enough.
What?
I'm sure it had nothing to do with it.
No.
So a little more history here. In 2000, amidst national and international ridicule and criticism and pressure for support of AIDS denialism and for resistance and apathy towards distribution and access of antiretroviral therapy drugs, Mbeki announces his withdrawal from additional public debate on the subject of AIDS denialism. So we don't hear nearly as much from Mbeki after this, but the guy can't really keep himself from opening his mouth every once in a while, and mostly acts through his health ministers from this point forward, or acts more quietly. In 2001, he claims that only 2% of deaths in South Africa are AIDS-related. He and Manto believe living in penury or extreme poverty is the primarily responsible for AIDS. So they maintain this belief even after making that claim earlier. And what's interesting is that it's not 2% that's of deaths associated. Nearly 30% of deaths in South Africa are associated with AIDS. Nearly a third of the think about two people you know, and you're in South Africa. If two of them have, or if
three people,
right. Two of them will probably die from something related to AIDS.
Right,
and so part of that has to do with the number of babies being born with it and not surviving. It's extremely prevalent, and a lot of people are dying from it.
Right. I mean, it's like being born with a death sentence, essentially, like that. I mean, a faster death sentence than normal life, I suppose, but it's ridiculous.
2% is a little bit shy of realistic.
Sounds a little off.
Just a little tiny bit. Margin of error.
Mbeki...
Just a bit outside.
In 2006, Mbeki begins a presidential project on African traditional medicine, tasked with verifying traditional African herbal mixtures suspected of having dramatic curative effects and with establishing an African pharmaceutical industry second to none in the world. Mbeki appoints an AIDS denialist as the head of this organization.
Wow.
It's like this whole situation is like a nightmare like scenario that came true.
You can't make this up.
It's so weird that like all these weird factors, like it's like if you were trying to think like what's the worst way that this could possibly go down, all the things actually seem to have happened.
Yeah, and this was 6 years ago that this last thing happened.
That is what kills me, is that it was so recent. It just boggles the mind that it was so recent.
In 2007, Mbeki and Manto dismiss the current deputy health minister for what is believed to be her mainstream views on AIDS. This is actually Zuma, who, for some reason, didn't really fight much of this throughout the course of it. But at this point, Mbeki and Manto have become a team instituting this AIDS denialism in the government.
You know, I'm finding that this story is so bizarre that I'm actually developing a conspiracy theory about this conspiracy theory.
Oh, really?
You know, I mean, these guys, you're saying that Mbeki formerly was a vitamin salesman.
No, not Mbeki, Matthias Rath.
Oh, Matthias Rath.
Yeah, okay. He was – so Matthias Rath is very rich. He owns several pharmaceutical producers, particularly of vitamins.
Because these guys are acting – the people that we're talking about now are acting like how do I put this? They're acting like people who run a company.
Indeed.
And are trying to corner a market because away from the big corporation in another country that is trying to take over. That's what it sounds like to me.
And I think there's a reason for that, especially in some of their later behavior of Mbeki. It has to do with Matthias Rath.
Huh.
If you look at the strings pulling all of this, or kind of the ghost in the denialist machine, much of the influence and the ideas come from Rath,
huh,
who had an economic agenda.
Yeah.
A fiscal agenda. Let's see. In 2001, South Africa's Medical Research Council study in concluding substantially... Oh, sorry. 2001, South Africa's Medical Research Council study concludes substantial increase in AIDS-related deaths. Death rates leaks to the media. In 2001, the Department of Health and Statistics in South Africa releases a joint statement saying MRC research is not absolutely definitive, and the mortality rates are estimates rather than exact calculations because they rest on various assumptions. I used the quotey fingers a few times there. So you can see there's a lot of internal dissent here. In South Africa, you have various... At this point, there's still various programs as of 2000 and kind of polls for power. You have organizations fighting for the implementation of good AIDS policy, and you have the president and the health administration pushing back the other direction. I want to talk a little bit about Matthias Rath. In 2005, the Medical Research Council in South Africa accepted payment for workshops from Rath Health Foundation. This is Matthias Rath's health foundation, headed by him, and which claims that vitamins cure AIDS and cancer. It also sells vitamins.
Right. Give us a little bit more background about Matthias Rath.
Yeah.
He's from Europe.
Yes, I believe he's
German. How does he end up working with the African government, the South African government?
So I think Mbeki was originally introduced to his work through the Visors and their illegal research trials.
Right.
Or their attempt at an illegal trial. And I don't really know who contacted who. If Mbeki reached out to Rath, it seems like he did when he established some of these cabinets and advisory boards for AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And he populated them with popular AIDS denialists at the time, he and Monto.
Right.
So it seems that Rath was probably passively contacted and simply took advantage of the situation at that point. He took out ads in papers. I'll read you one. Or he took out ads in papers against HIV. He put ads in papers for his own vitamins, for alternative medicines for AIDS.
Right.
Distributing propaganda that HIV does not cause AIDS, and fed a lot of this information to Thabo Mbeki, a lot of this AIDS denialism, and the same to Monto. And so this is kind of the ghost of the machine. At this point, the conceptual ruler of South Africa at this point with regards to AIDS is Rath.
The picture of this ad that you have of his, where
yes.
it says "Die this
is,
healthy."
This isn't really an ad from him. This sorry, is mocking sorry, him, right?
This is a yeah. this was a political cartoon from South Africa. I had an ad in here somewhere.
It really kind of hits it on the head, though. Like that's essentially what it's saying, though. It's just like you'll die healthy by taking his medicine.
Yeah, but here's what it says:
it's a weird sort of thing to believe.
Are you HIV positive? Don't take toxic ARVs. Take our veg and vitamin remedy. You'll die of AIDS, but you'll die healthy. And that's really an interesting perspective because it is they're telling it'll make you healthy, but they're just killing people. And I have a little bit more here. He also
has a research institute.
Yes, he does. He has his fingers in all kinds of things. His research institute very much supports the idea that vitamins cure cancer, and he's published some work to try to establish that. Yeah, he's a real ass.
That's insane.
Wow. Yeah.
It's almost all I could say whenever you're seeing all this stuff. It's just crazy. Yeah.
So, a little bit more about him and his health foundation. They conducted illegal medical trials in South Africa using vitamins. The results were published as newspaper advertisements claiming vitamins reverse the course of AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So the number of breach of ethics there, and disregard for international law, disregard for the safety of his patients is unequivocal. National Health Minister Monto invited him and his foundation to present their findings at the National Health Council. Regarding Rath and his unauthorized trials, this is what Health Minister Monto had to say. We can't, and this is scary, and I think that this quote that I'm about to read from Monto kind of defines the way that they thought and made policies for the years.
When I read this, I couldn't believe this.
This is the health minister of this country. quote, "We cannot transplant models designed for scientific validation of allopathic medicine and apply it to other remedies. There is need for creativity to come up with relevant and pragmatic models to prove safety, quality, and efficiency of complementary, alternative, and African traditional medicines." In summary, what she's really saying is, that's your science. We're using my science. That the scientific method is only valid for allopathic remedies and not complementary remedies. So this is really interesting because it shows that what I said earlier, it doesn't matter what's published in the scientific literature. It doesn't matter what investigations have been done. It doesn't matter what data exists.
Right.
Because the current or the administration at the time simply rejected the notion that science has any authority in the establishment of truth at all. They simply don't care what science has to say about it. They've already made up their minds. Any science that disagrees with them is the other science. Any science that agrees with them is the relevant, pragmatic model that proves safety, quality, and efficiency of CAM and African remedies.
This whole
it's mind-boggling.
You're right, Norm. Like, this whole thing makes more sense if you think of it like a big conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
This is almost like a true conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to describe the situation to someone, it almost sounds like this couldn't be true unless all these crazy things happened. That all happened.
Yeah. I'm really aggravated when I meet someone here in the United States who has this attitude towards science, which I do since I teach in philosophy departments and I run into postmodern people who are sympathetic to postmodern ideas. But in a way, I can kind of I can sleep at night because, you know, they live in a country where, you know, they have the luxury of criticizing the quote-unquote scientific establishment. They're probably not going to, you know, cause a whole lot of problems because of the, you know, when it comes down to it, they're going to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Though that's not always the case, right? We do hear about cases of people not doing this. But, you know, part of me says, okay, well, if you have health insurance and a good job and you don't go to the hospital because you have weird beliefs, part of me thinks I'm okay with you not getting well.
I am too.
But, remove yourself from the gene pool.
Right. But in a country that has the size of the problem that Africa has with AIDS, you cannot afford to have this kind of thinking about, you know, there being different versions of scientific research or different versions of criteria for how to evaluate studies or different ideas of quote unquote studies. I mean, that's
this is the worst case scenario when your scientific establishment, I should say, needs to be actually scientific. And the current AIDS policy in Africa now is very good. It's the best it could be, really, considering the conditions. But if we look at coverage in other African countries compared to South Africa, they were several years behind. And those several years killed hundreds of thousands of people.
Right.
Because of that simple delay of a few years and the fighting from the government. So I have one more slide of examples. First, I want to say about Matthias Rath before I go into this last little slide of progression of coverage and lack thereof. I just think it's interesting that Matthias Rath, who is a white member of Western culture from Germany, took advantage of post-apartheid paranoia against Western occupation in order to sell and take advantage and rape South Africa for his own profit.
Right.
It's insane to me that he took advantage of that situation in that way.
Right.
He did exactly what they were afraid of happening. He took advantage of their paranoia and harmed them for his own benefit.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to what Europe was doing to him for some time.
Yeah.
You know?
Sounds analogous.
So just to give you a few more examples of the way the government blocked AIDS and where they had gotten or blocked AIDS programs and treatment programs from 1999 to 2005. For over a year, the government blocked $72 million in funds awarded to South Africa from the Global Fund intended to go towards fighting AIDS, TB, and malaria.
They blocked it.
They simply said no.
Because it has strings attached, or... I don't get it.
No, it wasn't strings attached. They simply rejected the fund.
Is this just them not wanting to appear like they need help?
They refused to accept import.
I bet the reason, I don't know the history of this, but I bet the reason was because in order to, if you took the money, then that is admitting that there is a problem.
And that's part of it. One of the things that was an issue for Tabo especially was admitting that you have this poor, disease-ridden culture in South Africa. He didn't like that. He was very proud of his heritage. And he didn't want to admit that. He didn't want to look at that. Or he, not so much admit it, but admit it in the perspective of the African race, which is not an accurate way of looking at it to begin with. Also, 1999, Zidovudine, which is an antiretroviral, the AZT drug that we've mentioned a few times, which is not a very good drug and is quite toxic, but you can either almost definitely die or kind of almost definitely die. You know, what are you going to do? Is rejected on the basis the government would prefer preventative rather than treatment strategies.
I'm okay with rejecting a drug like AZT because it is too toxic.
Sure.
But that's not what they're doing. They're not rejecting it on the basis of trying to find something better that has less side effects. They're rejecting it on the side of pseudoscience.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they use the idea that it's toxic as an excuse. But it wouldn't have mattered. They would have rejected it anyway. Mbeki refuses to provide AZT for the prevention of mother-to-child transmission, claiming it to be toxic, mutagenic, and harmful to the immune system.
What does mutagenic mean?
Mutagenic, it means cancer-causing. Not necessarily cancer-causing, but that it causes mutations in the genome. Which inevitably...
That sounds bad.
Can cause cancer.
Yes.
To my knowledge, it is toxic. I don't believe it's mutagenic. Or that it's harmful to the immune system. Especially if you don't have one. AZT is rejected in all African National Congress governed provinces. Boehringer and Ingelheim, a pharmaceutical company, announced that it would provide nevirapine for 5 years to prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV-1, but South Africa restricted its availability. And this has partially to do with the African National Congress governed provinces. They couldn't restrict it completely. Finally, in 2003, keep in mind, HIV was, I believe, discovered in the late 80s. And its prevalence and impact was recognized several years later in the early 90s. We don't have a national mother to child transmission prevention program launched in South Africa until 2003, despite efforts as early and earlier than 1999.
Talk about being late for the party. I mean, this is so.
An antiretroviral therapy program was not launched until 2004. As of 2005, only 30% treatment coverage for parent to child transmission. By 2005.
You implement something that's going to take years for it to take, full effect.
So they're way behind the other sub-Saharan African countries at this point, which are all also have very high infection rates. But this is not about, this is not all or nothing. That failure to distribute good science and drugs to your populace for 5 years, that's hundreds of thousands of people who certainly would have liked to have gotten on the ball. And like I said earlier, we have two independent studies published around the same time. One of them estimates that 343,000 additional AIDS-related deaths between 2000 and 2005 occurred as a result of the apathy and the resistance of the president and the health minister, Thabo and Monto. A separate study estimates that about 330,000 additional AIDS-related deaths between 2000 and 2005. That's about 2.2 million years of life, if you assume the average life expectancy of someone living in South Africa. 2.2 million years of conscious human life just
gone because of like a weird sort of conspiracy theory that it came true.
Give you an idea, in 2004, I had mentioned the Indian Ocean tsunami. It killed between 230 and 310,000 people. That certainly got a lot of press. And it killed less people. in general. And so that's the that was the deadliest natural disaster in the last 40 years. This idea has killed more people than the deadliest natural disaster in 40 years. Right. We have Hurricane Katrina. This has killed more people than Hurricane Katrina, more than the tsunamis, more than earthquakes. See, everything is, you remember the last 40
this
years.
This has taken its time. You can't do that with us. You need to hit us all at the same time.
Yeah. Or we don't notice. Right. Yeah.
If a tsunami killed all those people like over a period of like 10 years, eh.
So South Africa...
We can't be bothered with that sort of thing.
South Africa today, or as of... So things are getting better. It's not all doom and gloom. As of, I think, 2009 is where these numbers are coming from. We have about 5.6 million people in South Africa infected with AIDS, or sorry, with HIV. We have 1,000 AIDS-related deaths per year, 500 new infections per year, or about 1,400 per day.
And it looks like South Africa is... South Africa has a much bigger problem with AIDS than North Africa does.
Yes.
And I don't know if that has to do with South Africa being just more populous or having more problems of poverty. I don't think they have.
There's a few reasons. First,
I think they do have more significant problems of poverty, but it's not like it's that huge of a gap.
I said 1,000 related deaths per year. I meant per day, not per year.
Yeah, slight difference.
But yeah, what you're saying, it has to do with a number of things, partly because of the epidemiological origin. It has to do with population density. It has to do with policy.
Right.
Sub-Saharan Africa was where a lot of the AIDS denialism policy was really implemented. You have the Saharan Desert is kind of a geographical barrier.
Gotcha.
You also have here, if you actually look on the map, I'm sorry, our viewers can't see this.
We'll post it.
Yeah, we'll post it. But right here where you, I'm not sure what country that is, but you go up, you actually see the, what desert is that? Right in here. Southwest Africa. There's a desert there.
You're asking the wrong guy. I am terrible geography.
Anyway, there's...
You're not talking about the Sahara.
No. Sahara is in northern Africa. There's another desert in that region of Africa, too, that's another barrier. There's virtually nobody there with Bushmen.
Right.
Is that a racial slur, Bushmen? I don't care.
We're going to edit all that out.
So, yeah, you can look at a lot of this and you can see geographically and population density. A lot of this is correlated with cities, things like that. So that's really the reason.
Yep.
280,000 deaths per year. 45% of all deaths are AIDS-related. I said 30 earlier. That's from an earlier study. But as of 2009, I believe 45% of all deaths are AIDS-related, and 12% of the population is HIV-positive.
Hmm. I mean, all right, so let's talk about, I guess, like the lesson that we should take from this. I mean, talk about like the importance of why you want to have science being done properly and being checked. You don't want to have officials, like it's important, like what people believe is important.
I don't think this is about science being done properly. Matthias Rath, you're going to have jackasses doing bad science. You're always going to have that. I think this is a referendum on science education.
Yeah.
The general public needs to understand the criteria between, the difference between real science and pseudoscience, the difference between anecdotal evidence and studies, the difference between science and corporations.
And I've brought this up, I believe, in our CAM episode. As someone who works in science, having a degree in science doesn't even necessarily make you a good scientist.
Apparently not.
Right.
That education isn't there for anybody, really.
Yeah.
And clearly lives are at risk here. I mean,
yeah,
it's astounding.
Another thing I think it brings up is I hear a lot this idea of live and let live. Why do you care what I believe, et cetera, et cetera. And it really does matter.
If your beliefs are killing people, that matters.
It matters what you believe. It matters what the people around you believe. It matters what their criteria are for justifying belief. Because no man is an island.
Yeah.
We affect each other in the decisions we make. We are a community of people. And if you believe stupid things and you act on stupid beliefs, you could inevitably hurt people around you. You reduce the quality of life for your society. So yeah, it matters. I care what other people believe.
If if education broadly, you know, construed, does not change, then problems like this are going to get worse.
Absolutely.
Right. Because our world is becoming more technological. It's becoming more based in ultimately, you know, the insights that science brings and the practicalities that companies make from those insights. And so, you know, the use of drugs, the use of vaccines, and all of the electronics technology that we use, the way we implement them, these things are all based in ideas that the general public doesn't seem to understand.
Yeah.
Well, just look, I mean, this thing happened so recently. This wasn't like at a time like where technologically speaking we didn't have a lot of available technology already. This was just like in the new millennium.
We're not talking about people, these government officials, health ministers. We're not talking about people who aren't educated.
Right.
Yeah.
These are educated people. You know, someone who is not educated, you can understand them believing in weird things.
I think this is almost the hardest part about this to understand is these people all were seemingly pretty well educated.
Right.
Yeah.
And they still allow this sort of thing to happen. I mean, that's hard for me to wrap my head around.
Well, something about the way we are educating people, and when I say we, I mean in the broadest possible sense.
Yeah.
Human race, right? Are educating people in basic scientific principles is failing.
Well, certainly. I mean, you're taking a course in chemistry right now,
right.
And you were showing me your cards where you're memorizing all these terms and various things. At no point in my science education, in any of my science courses, was the fundamentals of scientific justification ever given to me.
Right.
It's all technical. It's all memorization. It's all chemical
right.
pathways,
right.
Mechanisms. But at no point does anyone in any of my courses or in my career ever frame a question in the sense of how do we know this is true?
Right.
What is the evidence and how do we interpret this evidence? How was that evidence gained? And I have conversations daily in my work saying things like, well, how do you know that this is good evidence? How do you know that these observations
sure.
are good observations? How were they taken?
Sure.
Well, we found them, or et cetera, et cetera. And the way things are observed matters. The criteria under which you observe things matters.
Yeah.
How you analyze evidence matters.
There are a lot of possible pitfalls in the entire
right.
process.
Yeah. Before you ever get to a conclusion, there are so many things you have to consider, and people just don't, and they're not aware of them. Working scientists,
and you have people like Matthias Rath who take advantage of people's ignorance.
Absolutely, yeah.
So
despicable people.
And you're always going to have that. You're
yeah.
always going to have. There's always going to be somebody that is there to make a profit off of mm-hmm. someone's ignorance, or even worse. And we've talked about this before. Even worse, he might be a believer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He might not be just a charlatan who is taking advantage. He might actually believe that what he is doing. And then in some respects, that person is more dangerous
yeah.
because
yeah.
they themselves are influential and don't understand science either.
Mm. For either way, this is why it's important just increasing education on this sort of thing in general is how you combat it.
Yeah.
Whether he's a believer or not, the more information and education specifically that's out there on it, that's how you're going to combat this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Okay. Go ahead, Nick.
Are we ready to sign off here? This has been a bizarre...
I have a bad feeling.
This has been a bizarre thing. I can't... It's just bizarre. The whole word for this to me is just bizarre.
Yeah, it would be nice to end the episode on a light note, but I don't know if we can on this one.
Yeah.
You're bringing me down, Chalmers.
It really is. This is not an episode... didn't intend it to be funny
yeah.
Or even necessarily interesting. It's
yeah.
it's really quite tragic.
Yeah.
330,000 people
right.
for the beliefs of maybe a few dozen people.
Right.
So from us here at the Project, please, think responsibly or we're all fucked.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
When we talk about...
That saying has a little more meaning.
Yeah, when we talk about leaders believing stupid things and hurting people, Hitler is not the most recent example of a bad belief hurting people.
Yeah.
We have modern examples.
Yeah, clearly we do.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Take it easy.